October 10, 1916. A reddish shadow that spread over part of the lunar crater Plato, reported from the Observatory of Florence, Italy, Sci America, 121-181. November 25, 1916. About 25 bright flashes, in rapid succession, in the sky of Cardiff, Wales, according to Arthur Mee, E.N.G. Mech, 104-239. COL. Mark Wick writes, in the Jour BAA, 27-188, that, at 6:10 p.m., April 15, 1917, he had seen, upon the sun, a solitary spot, different from all sunspots that he had seen in an experience of 43 years. COL. Mark Wick had written to Mr. Maunder, of the Greenwich Observatory, and had been told that, in photographs taken of the sun upon this day, one at 11:17 and another at 11:20 o'clock, there was no sign of a sunspot. July 4, 1917. An eclipse of the sun, and an extraordinary luminous object said to have been a meteor, in France, Bull. Soc. Astro, de France, 31-299. About 6:20 p.m., this day, there was an explosion over the town of Colby, Wisconsin, and a stone fell from the sky, Science, September 14, 1917. August 29, 1917. A luminous object that was seen moving upon the moon, Bull. Soc. Astro. De France, 31-439. February 21, 1919. An intensely black line extending out from the lunar crater Lexal, E.N.G. Mech, 109-517. Upon May 19, 1919, while Harry Hawker was at sea, untraceable messages, meaningless in the languages of this earth, were picked up by wireless, according to dispatches to the newspapers. They were interpreted as the letters KUJ and VKAJ. In October 1913, occurred something that may not be so very mysterious because of nearness to the sea. One supposes that if extramundane vessels have sometimes come close to this earth, then sailing away, terrestrial aeronauts may have occasionally left this earth, or may have been seized and carried away from this earth. Upon the morning of October 13, 1913, Albert Jewell started to fly in his aeroplane from Hempstead Plains, Long Island, to Staten Island. The route that he expected to take was over Jamaica Bay, Brooklyn, Coney Island, and the Narrows. New York Times, October 14, 1913. That was the last seen or heard of him. He has been as completely lost as if he had evaporated into air. But as to the disappearance of Capt. James, there are circumstances that do call for a special attention. New York Times, June 2, 1919. That Capt. Mansell R. James was lost somewhere in the Berkshire Hills, upon his flight from Boston to Atlantic City, or, rather, upon the part of his route between Lee, Massachusetts, and Mitchell Field, Long Island. He had left Lee upon May 29. Over the Berkshires, or in the Berkshires, he had disappeared. According to later dispatches, searching parties had scoured the Berkshires, without finding a trace of him. Upon June 4, army planes arrived and searched systematically. There was general excitement in this mystery of Capt. James. Rewards were offered. All subscribers of the Southern New England Telephone Company were enlisted in a quest for news of any kind, Boy Scouts turned out. Up to this date of writing there has been nothing but a confusion of newspaper dispatches, that two children had seen a plane, about 13 miles north of Long Island Sound, that two men had seen a plane fall into the Hudson River, near Poughkeepsie, that, in a gully of Mount Riga, near Millerton, N.Y., had been found the remains of a plane, that part of a plane had been washed ashore from Long Island Sound, near Branford. The latest interest in the subject that I know of was in the summer of 1921. A heavy object was known to be at the bottom of the Hudson River, near Poughkeepsie, and was thought to be Capt. James' plane. It was dredged up and found to be a log. For an extraordinary story of windows, in Newark, NJ, that were perforated by unfindable bullets, see New York Evening Telegram, September 19, 1919, and the Newark Evening News. The occurrence is a counterpart of Mickelson's experience. The detonations at Reading were heard 7 years apart. Here it is not quite 7 years later. London Times, September 26, 1919 that upon September 25, a shock had been felt at Reading, that inquiries had led to information of no known explosion near Reading. In the Times, October 14, Mr. H. L. Hawkins writes that the shock was quite definitely an earthquake, but its origin was superficial and that the shock was transmitted through the earth more than through the air. In the London Daily Chronicle, September 27, Mr. Hawkins, having considered all suggestions that the shock was a subterranean earthquake, had written, however, as the whole thing terminated in a bump and a big bang, without subsequent shaking of the ground, it points more to an explosion of a natural type up in the air than to a real earthquake. And, in the London Daily Mail, Mr. Hawkins is quoted, that if the detonation were local, he would believe that it was an aerial explosion, meteoric, but, if it were widespread, it would be considered an earthquake. And in the whole series of the Reading phenomena, this violent detonation was most distinctly local to Reading. Reading Observer, September 27, 1919. The most probable explanation of the occurrence is that there was an explosion somewhere near enough to affect the town. Officials at the Greenwich Observatory were unable to throw any light on the matter, and said that their instruments showed no signs of earth disturbance. It is said that the sound and shock were violent, and that, in the residential parts of Reading, the streets were crowded with persons discussing the occurrence. There was a similar shock in Michigan, November 27, 1919. In many cities, persons rushed from their homes, thinking that there had been an earthquake, New York Times, November 28. But, in Indiana, Illinois, and Michigan, a blinding glare was seen in the sky. Our acceptance is that this occurrence is, upon a small scale, of the type of many catastrophes in Italy and South America, for instance, when just such blinding glares have been seen in the sky, data of which have been suppressed by conventional scientists, or data of which have not impressed conventional scientists. English Mechanic, 110-257 J.W. Scholes, of Huddersfield, writes that, upon December 19, 1919, he saw, near the lunar crater Littrove, a very conspicuous black ink mark. Upon page 282, W.J. West, of Gosport, writes that he had seen the mark upon the 7th of December. March 22, 1920 A light in the sky of this earth, and an illumination upon the moon, E.N.G. Mech, 111-142. That so close to this earth is the moon that illuminations known as auroral often affect both this earth and the moon. July 20 and 21, and September 13, 1920 Dull rumbling sounds and quakes at Comorie, Perthshire, London Times, July 23 and September 14, 1920. According to a dispatch to the Los Angeles Times clipping sent to me by Mr. L.A. Hopkins, of Chicago thunder and lightning and heavy rain, at Portland, Oregon, July 21, 1920, objects falling from the sky, glistening, white fragments that looked like bits of polished china. The explanation of the local weather bureau is that they may have been picked up by a whirlwind and carried to the district where they were found. The objection to this standardized explanation is the homogeneousness of the falling objects. How can one conceive of winds raging over some region covered with the usual great diversity of loose objects and substances, having a liking for little white stones, sorting over maybe a million black ones, green ones, white ones, and red ones, to make the desired selection? One supposes that a storm brought to this earth fragments of a manufactured object, made of something like china, from some other world. In the Literary Digest, September 2, 1921, is published a letter from Carl G. Gauman, of Detroit, Michigan, upon the fall from the sky, in southwest China, November 17, 1920, of a substance that resembled blood. It fell upon three villages close together, and was said to have fallen somewhere else 40 miles away. The quantity was great. In one of the villages, the substance covered the ground completely. Mr. Gauman accepts that the substance did fall from the sky, because it was found upon roofs as well as upon the ground. He rejects the conventional red dust explanation, because the spots did not dissolve in several subsequent rains. He says that anything like pollen is out of the question, because at the time nothing was in bloom. November 23, 1920. A correspondent writes, to the English Mechanic 112-214, that he saw a shaft of light projecting from the moon, or a spot so bright that it appeared to project, from the limb of the moon, in the region of Funrius. About January 1, 1921, several irregular, black objects that crossed the sun. To the Rev. William Ellison, E.N.G. Mech, 112-276, they looked like pieces of burnt paper. July 25, 1921, a loud report, followed by a sharp tremor, and a rumbling sound, at Comery, London Times, July 27, 1921. July 31, 1921, a common indication of other lands from which come objects and substances to this earth but are reluctant to bother with anything so ordinarily marvelous. Because we have conceived of intenser times and furies of differences of potential between this earth and other worlds, torrents of dinosaurs, in broad volumes that were streaked with lesser animals, pouring from the sky, with a foam of tusks and fangs, enveloped in a bloody vapor that was falsely dramatized by the sun, with rainbow mockery. Or, in terms of planetary emotions, such an outpouring was the serenade of some other world to this earth. If poetry is imagery, and if a flow of images be solid poetry, such a recitation was in three-dimensional hyperbole that was probably seen or overheard and criticized in Mars, and condemned for its extravagance in Jupiter. Some other world, meeting this earth, ransacking his solid imagination and uttering her living metaphors, singing a flood of mastodons, purring her butterflies, bellowing an ardor of buffaloes. Sailing away, sneaking up close to the planet Venus, murmuring her antelopes, or arching his periphery and spitting horses at her.